Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
Show.
They got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation. All right, brothers and sisters, Black Power, we are back. We are back. You are listening to the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Monday, nightly broadcast. I'm about to say Monday. We haven't been on Monday for going over a year now. Going on almost 2 years now. This is our nightly broadcast. Tonight's topic, the role of the family in the black nation. We had our host, Brother Emmanuel, on earlier. We had already played our musical interlude, but there was a technical difficulty that took place on the part of the engineering. We didn't schedule the time duration. It was a slight glitch. So it defaulted us to 15 minutes. Well, we correctly caught the error, fixed it, and now the show goes on. So what we'll do as we wait to hear from our host, Brother Emmanuel, is I'm going to play a couple of quick clips. This first clip is going to be a clip on nationalism by Malcolm X. It's only 4 minutes. And that will be followed up by a clip by Dr. Amos Wilson on propaganda and nation building as it all builds into tonight's program, Black Power.
When we start the revolution, all they probably do is wail for chill. When we start the revolution, when we start the revolution, all they probably do is wail for chill.
We are African, and we happen to be in America. We're not American. We are people who formerly were Africans who were kidnapped and brought to America. Our forefathers weren't the pilgrims. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock was landed on us. We were brought here against our will. We were not brought here to be made citizens. We were not brought here to enjoy the constitutional gifts that they speak so beautifully about today. Because we weren't brought here to be made citizens today, now that we've become awakened to some degree and we begin to ask for those things which they say are supposedly for Americans, they look upon us with hostility and unfriendliness. If you're interested in freedom, you need some judo, you need some karate, you need all the things that will help you fight for freedom. Nationalism is the wave of the present and the future. It is nationalism that's bringing freedom to oppressed people all over the world. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the Algerians. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the Nigerians and to the Ghanaians. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the people of Uganda and Tanganyika and Sudan and Somaliland. The Africans didn't get it by sitting in. They didn't get it by waiting in. They didn't get it by singing, "We Shall Overcome." They got it through nationalism. And you and I will get it through nationalism. What is it? What is it that makes it difficult for the philosophy of nationalism to spread among the so-called Negroes? Number one, they think they have a stake in America. They think they have an investment in this country, which we do. We invested 310 years of slave labor, 310 years, every day of which your and my mother and father worked for nothing, not 8 hours a day. There was no union in that day. They worked from sun up until sundown, from can't see in the morning until can't see at night. They never had a day off. And on Sunday, they were allowed to sit down and sing about when they die, they wouldn't be slaves no more. When they die, they wouldn't be slaves no more. They'd go up in the sky, and every day would be Sunday. That's a shame. And it is that 310 years of slave labor that went in, that was my and your contribution into this particular economy and political system. They can give us the back pay. Let's join in. If this is what the Negro wants, let's join in. Let's show him how to struggle. Let's show him how to fight. Let's show him how to bring about a real revolution. Let's make him stop jiving. You don't need a debate. You don't need a filibuster. You need some action.
Black Power, that was Brother Malcolm. We have our host back on, Brother Manuel. Let me open up your mic. Brother Malcolm was talking about black nationalism. What are we fighting for as a black nation? Well, to fight for a black nation means we fight for land, a territory of our own, to self-govern, not to be ruled by those who enslaved our ancestors, not to be put in a second-class state, not to be patrolled by the pigs, not to be dictated to in the courts of judges of the wicked people who enslaved our ancestors. In order to have a black nation, you must have the black families. And so, without further ado, I'm going to bring on Brother Emmanuel. We do have a clip, a 23-minute clip, that we will play for Dr. Amos Wilson when he addresses the propaganda in nation building. Yeah, propaganda in nation building. But what's the sense in propaganda? What's the sense in having a goal, an aim, and operating in a role of nationalism if the very root of nationalism is family, man, woman, and child, and the balance thereof of how we all fight for our liberation and for self-determination? So with that being said, Brother Manu, can you hear me, mic check?
Black Power, can you hear me?
Yes, 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 yes. We had a slight technical difficulty, but the show goes on.
Oh, it has to.
Actually, I got to keep it 100. When I was setting up the show, I put in the topic, I put in the time, but I may have possibly not put in the duration. So it defaulted to 15 minutes. But just as things have been going lately, we keep getting time beyond time. So we know we're not gonna get to the promised land on Pharaoh's chariot, but as guerrillas, as freedom fighters, we're gonna seize every moment. So we push through. And it's almost as we didn't even skip a beat. It's almost as if we got a built-in bathroom break. You dig what I'm saying? It defaulted to 15 minutes off of the error that I made by not putting in the 120 minutes. But it still ran over, and it would have kept running over until the 7:30 moment once I caught the error. See, if you make a mistake, be honest about you made a mistake and then correct it. Don't waddle in it. Don't be like, oh, look at you. You fucked up. We quit. Yeah, you fucked up. Come on. So I think we got enough listeners on right now. Pretty much on as far as the call-in callers, everyone that fell off that was listening earlier came back on, and we got even more people on. And hopefully those who are listening out in the cyberspace across the globe did the same. And we thank you all for your patience with us, which is kind of like a follow-up of what we were talking about on last night. Who will lead the nation? If you err, correct your error quickly. And the show must keep going on. So I give you our brother, your brother, Brother Emmanuel, Black Power.
Black Power, General. And I also thank everybody that's here tonight that has come through this technical difficulty with us and are back to continue the edification of our souls. And I thank also those that did as we asked and brought other people in. And as the general say, we have some new people on that were not on at first. And so we thank you all for being here tonight. Tonight's subject is the family's role in the black nation. And it is a part, as we were saying before, it's a part of a series in, called Restoration Through Reeducation, Saving Ourselves, that we are implementing into our culture, into our people, to restore the miseducation that was given to us in all areas of our life. And one of the most dominant areas of our life that we have been given all type of rules and indoctrinations based off of religion, based off of regular life, is that we as black people whoop our children. And, you know, it is passed on to other races, other ethnicities, you know, and they have some forms of corporal punishment. At one time in the schoolhouse, you could get paddled, you could get popped with those boards by those principals, you know, whenever you would do something wrong. And it has been, you know, all the way back into history, many, many more horrendous ways that people were punished to stop others from doing the same behavior. You kill somebody, they killed you. And the
Hello? Oh, man. The game, Brother Emmanuel called drop. I know he's going to call right back in. I'm going to go ahead and play. Now, this wasn't no error on my part. I'm going to give the brother a chance to come back in. But we always ready. We always ready. You know, he was talking about corporate punishment and how the school system had corporate punishment in. Who is it for another person that is not you to put their hands on your child? I believe that clearly comes back from slavery. And if your child errant, it just makes just, it's more sense, even if you set them to the side, wait until the parent got there, and then let the parent deal with it when they got home, as opposed to some person taking out perhaps their frustrations out on our people. And we know that these institutions are riddled with racism in the curriculum. So those who teach the curriculums will be riddled with racism. So imagine a racist issuing corporal punishment to your child in the school. Or someone who is black, who got a black inferiority complex. Or you know how Negroes get, they try to be even more brutal to black people to prove themselves to white people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So imagine a child going through this, corporal punishment. So we got our brother back, but I want us to end this madness. And I do believe and concur that this message of chattel slavery. Because I can show many a time in black culture and African culture where our people erred. They were in Mali and I believe in the Mau Mau, that is, in Kenya. I heard of a practice where they would, when someone erred, they would circle them and push positive affirmations towards them, or send them through a rites of passage program, or even counseling. But the result of brutality, I don't believe that was our way. So I'm going to yield back to our brother, as he is back. Brother Emmanuel, you have the floor.
Thank you, General. And if this does get cut off, y'all know that's not by my doing. That's them playing around right now. They're trying to stop it, but they won't stop it. We keep coming. We keep coming. So we were talking about that, and I'm glad that you expounded on that. It's because think about this. In the times when we were in the slavery, they would have one slave they would pick, and they would use that slave to whip the rest of the slaves. And what it caused was, it caused the slaves to hate that one slave that was whipping them. And it caused that slave that was whipping them to feel that he or she was above everyone else. That's a act of separation, the tactic that you do on any human being. You put one above the other, and they will fight to get equal if they are equal. And so when you go to that schoolhouse, and they had the corporal punishments in some places where they'll paddle them, but then they also had, like the general was saying, well, they would call the parent. And a lot of parents was called. And when the parent get there, what would they do? They would tell the parent, all right, if you're not going to let us pop them, then you have to. And what will parents do? Parent get up to the school, beat the shit out of us, right in front of everybody. I don't want to hear that bullshit about what you're doing in school. I don't want to hear the parent call me. And we thought that was the right way. We thought, oh, yeah, that made me not act bad in school again, you know. But where did that root come from? And as we said, it came from slavery, where we were used against each other. And what happens when you whoop your child in front of this stranger, because this stranger says the only way for your child to get scholastically, academically right, or behaviorally right for a few hours a day is for you to come and resort to beating them, to hitting them. Your child is supposed to depend on you to be the sole protector of everything. It is a magnificent song. The little sister sang, she said he is the sole protector, the sole offender of anything I fear. She was talking about he is, her man is, in the IRE. She said he is, amongst many things, she was giving us the example as being to her. We are the sole, sole means first and number one only, offender. Not defender, offender, like you're going to go after whatever she feels and get rid of it. And so that's the parent-child relationship on what it is supposed to be. The child's supposed to have a bond of love with you to know that under no circumstances will you do me like the world will do me, the way the world doing it to me. The world do it to me in hate. The world don't care about me. Are you doing it to me to show me and teach me what the world will do to me if I don't take care of my business properly? Or are you doing it to join in like the world says you're supposed to do me? And we know the world been wrong. So we whoop our children ourselves. I remember when I was in second grade, this white dude, my teacher, Mr. O, called my father. Attempted to call him. And I knew my daddy worked a job, trash man. He couldn't be reached like that. You know, we had a corporate 500 fathers. We had the real hard workers that you ain't going to reach them. So I was just, you know, trying to show myself off. But I'm showing myself off. Why? Because this man is up in here intimidating me. And this is what you said, oh, the teachers wouldn't do that. Or you just bad. You just bad. I had this label of being just a horrible kid, all because these teachers would say stuff to them, to my parents, and they would listen. So he called, couldn't reach my father. So he bring me back in the classroom, and I guess, you know, his feelings are hurt. His feelings are hurt with a student of his and his behavior for a few hours a day. Now, they knew back in the day if you called our parents would whoop your butt. So it was a way to get your butt whooped. They call that parent and tell you, and you, the parent, get so frustrated. Oh, Lordy, Lord, I'll talk to him. I do what I got to do. And so he called my mother. Now, at that time, second grade, I wasn't with my mother. My mother had, you know, they had some court issues, and I was staying with my father. I had to be with my father, second grade, by myself. So I don't have a lot of friends. And the few that I do have, you know, I'm wearing bell bottoms. You know, I got hand-me-downs. So I don't look all good. I'm already getting ridiculed. I got this attitude that I'm ready to fight everybody that's teasing me. So, you know, the kids up in there doing their thing, and I'm a little more than the teacher can handle. So he uses his authority, and he called my mama and put this gravy on top of the fried chicken, top of the mashed potato. He just made it sound so bad. I was just the spawn of Satan, and he couldn't control me. You can't control a seven-year-old, man, and this is your job. But anyway, so my mother comes up to the school. Now, this is what I'm thinking, believing that you are what you're supposed to be, the protector of me, and I can lean on you. I'm going to tell you what he done did to me. But instead, we as black folks were trained to respond as they were right. So my mother came up in second grade and took me outside and pulled some switches off the tree and commenced to beating the shit out of me, whooping my ass. Things that if you do to a child right now, if you take a child outside right now, pull a switch off and whoop him till he got red marks and bleeding all over, you'd be under the jail these days. Everybody and their mama, you show a video of some parent hitting their child like that, y'all be like, oh, man, kill that mother. That ain't right, right, right. But back in the day, this was right. And so I'm sitting there getting what he wanted me to get. And I guess my mother was going too far for him. So he come out there because I'm on the side of the T building. This is an outside building. And I'm getting the shit beat out of me. I'm really, she really done came up here and is whooping me for this man. So I done took the whoop and he come out there. Hey, ma'am, you got to go to the principal's office to do that. Like, you know, oh, we got to be in a controlled environment to do this shit, huh? So my mama was like, nah, I ain't got to go nowhere. I'm done. And you can get your ass back in there and be quiet. I go back in there, everybody laughing at me. You done added more ridicule. You done added more trauma to me having to deal with these same kids every day as a job like y'all, 9 to 3, 8 to 3, 7 to 3, you're not respecting my life. That I got to do this. Y'all, you respecting that your children are getting up, working longer hours than a lot of us continuously just for the 12-year scholastic institution that they gave us over here called school, school systems. Peep this. Our children are doing great things. But anyway, so I done got my butt whooped at the school. So what he did, it worked. I get home. My mama didn't call my daddy, and yeah, I got another whooping. So anyway, we're getting back to it. Was that what I needed? Is that what everyone needed for me to get right, to act right? I'm already going through a situation that y'all not even understanding, that you're separated from my father, my mother. I don't get to wake up like little Johnny with mom and daddy in the home. I don't get the balance of discipline and emotional love is what a child needs, because that's what it took to make life. You needed a balance of woman and man to mate in the form of acceptance of each other's body. Procreation is what they call it in a beautiful word, but it ain't nothing but fucking. When you do that and you make children, you are agreeing to this. So in making children, you have to have that same balance and have mom and daddy in there. But when y'all don't give me that, now I'm off balance and I'm having to deal with the world. I'm having to deal with the world. I ain't getting paid for it, nothing. I'm dealing with the world and learning. But the world has taught our, had taught our parents that that was the way to make us act right. Was that truly? No, it wasn't. And that's why in these days, realizing, because a lot of people back then, they took it too far. You had a whole lot more beatings when the authorities allowed you to get your butt whooped, when it was popular to everybody for us to be giving out whoopings and receiving whoopings. So this go back to the brothers telling them, we're going to put the guns down and we're going to put the gloves up. Now, when they pick the gloves up and they go in the ring and they fight legally and all that, and we fairly fight as a man, when he get his butt, what does he do? Is he just going to take it like that? No. His feelings are still going to be hurt. He's still a person that has been embarrassed because he competed in a competition and didn't win. That's what anybody does. Do you see the losing team celebrating with the Super Bowl team out there on the field? Nobody joins with the losing team. That losing feel is not a good feel. So when we give each other that feel, we have offended each other. And the little brother, he don't let it go. So when he riding and he feeling low and he see that dude that beat him up at the store that night, now he got a gun. Now that's why Ray Ray got shot. That's why Junebug got killed. That's why Lonnie B dead. Because Lonnie B whooped that fool. Because Lonnie B and them was out there fighting, because we are a culture that popular by hitting and hurting each other as the way to get the respect. Or I'm going to make that money. You're going to respect me through this physical pain. And then when we see other cultures or other people not doing that, we say, oh, y'all just weak. Or they don't know. They have not been indoctrinated into their bodies and their cultures doing these behaviors and looking at it as it's normal. I still got marks on my body today as a grown man from butt whoopings as a kid. And that was the quote-unquote black way. And so now, when our children act a little crazy, we pop them. What is that rooted on? Again, making you do what I want you to do. That is control. That is not care. That is not care. And if you are giving a child, through doing what your father said, coming together and multiplying, if you are giving a child, you are giving a responsibility for that person. And you are to show that person this world that you brought them into. And you are to show them this world in love, in patience, in care, as you would have wanted for you. I don't care what you didn't get. As the general say, now we are strong enough to accept what we did wrong and let's move forward. But let's dissect what we did wrong so we can understand and don't blame ourselves, don't blame each other, but instead blame the world for incorporating this on people. And now we are exemplifying it. Now we can correct it. Again, as I said, did Johnny and Susu need that to become a lawyer and a doctor and all these things? They went to all these schools and all that. They did everything right. They got good conduct. Now, did they get that? No, but we we're told that's how it happened. Again, that goes back to that slave master and him beating us. He would do all type of tactics, beat the father in front of the mother. That psychologically lets you feel like your man had no more strength because another man could beat him down. So now you're out here, if you're with a man and he's ready to stay down for you and love your children and do right by you, if he gets beat up by another guy, he's less than a man. He's weak. Not that he's a soldier that went in the battle. Because remember, every soldier that went in the battle didn't win. If they did, we wouldn't have dead soldiers. Somebody got the drop on somebody before. You're never too bad. It's always somebody better, and we all share space. So we've been taught that the toughness matters. You're less than a man if you don't, but it all goes back again to slave master and the slave master doing these purposeful tactics that would go down generations. And it says all of y'all would do it. The rest of them, the mama would keep it going. So Big Mama would keep on whooping. Papa would stand off to the side. He don't say too much. He wasn't given the mouth to speak. He wasn't given authority in the house to speak in the slave culture, in the slave times. So when we got out of that, he continued to stay silent. And then his son saw him standing there staying silent in the house, and he thought it's what I'm supposed to do as a man, stay silent and strong in the house. And he taught it to his son through example. And then when they saw one child in there that didn't stay strong and silent but moved around and stuff, they said, oh, that's the black sheep, but he's doing it wrong. But we got to whoop him into submission. Beat. Physical pain. If I don't hit you, you ain't supposed to hit me. See, and I always go to the scripture. For many of those that know the scripture and for many of those that don't, they're going to always tell you some stuff like, honor thy father and thy mother that thy days be long. That's a manipulation. Because that's saying it one-sided. You don't see a quarter with just one side on it. It ain't a quarter. That's telling the thing half-assed. It also says, parents, do not provoke thy children to anger. See, and so if the parent is not provoking you to anger, then you would be honoring your parent. But those that don't honor their parent, it's 9 times out of 10, it's because the parent has provoked them to anger. I don't care. You were doing what you thought was right. When you whoop my ass, I'm angry at you. When you offend me for this world, I'm angry at you because you brought me here and I'm you. You're hurting yourself. We're hurting ourselves. We're telling our little brothers and sisters to fight, fight, fight. That's the real way. You tell another girl, you ain't. Yeah, I was telling y'all thought I was crazy, but I wasn't, didn't I? I thought, you can't play with me, but you got to do that. You got to say that. Get to your respect. And when Keisha did, people show up to your fucking funeral than they'll show up to your birthday party. More people spend money on your funeral than they'll spend on your birthday party. That's the respect you'll get from doing that and demising yourselves. That is what we have been doing, and we're wondering why. Well, this is why. This is how we fix it. Let's go back and let's see all the ways that even mama told daddy to be quiet. Mama talking to her son, telling them to be quiet, shut up. Mama telling her daughters to be quiet, shut up. They are you. They're the women warriors. You can't tell a warrior to shut up. Be quiet. And you're the teacher. You hear a teacher talking to your child like that and you'll go crazy. Well, you're the ultimate teacher. How dare we? They taught us wrong. And we mixed into it, but we can come back out right. So another way, in the home, since they told daddy he can't talk, now that daddy is talking, everybody need to hush and listen. You need to revere daddy's words. Just like they revered master's words. Anytime master talk, everybody shut up. Nobody talk. They jump. They didn't question master. If master sold the whole house out, okay, so what? Master must have a plan. It wasn't no questioning. We say, oh, no, we can't do that with each other. Why can't we? It's because we've been taught to not do that. But you can also be taught to do it. You can also be taught to respect me and respect her. She can be the ma'am, the queen of the house. But just like the teaching against us, forming in the house and staying in the house. The government brought that back and told the woman, okay, here's another incentive. If y'all don't stay together, we'll take care of you more than being with him will take care of you. And so you look at regular life economics and say, well, I got these children of ours, and we got to do what we got to do. It still separates us when they tell you to stick together through the hard times, because if we were having more potlucks, ain't nobody in the hood is gonna be hungry. We don't need or have to depend on doing it the government way. Daddy having to hide when the social workers come by. Now that tells the son inferiorly that he's as a man, he has to hide. That tells the man that he ain't honored enough. So his woman would stand up strong enough for him against everything and accept him, acknowledge him. King of the castle, why they don't say that with us? Because they have taken our ways and taken them and indoctrinated them in their families. They talk to their children. They get an understanding. They go through therapy. You have to. We've been traumatized. We have PTSD. We done been to more funerals in one lifetime than some people done even seen dead folks. And we've been to that many funerals of friends and loved ones at a young age because of these same things. And all we say is, oh, man, you know, one day you're here, the next day you're gone. We just got to go. No. Violence against each other is not the answer. That's like throwing a log inside of a fire, but at the same time wanting the fire to go out. It's not going to happen. We cannot promote that anymore. I understand when we did it at that time, and for those gladiators at that time, that's good. Stop calling the children weak for not being what we were at that time. Embrace what they are now. Parents, build your children up as who they are, not who you want them to be. You, the football player, he don't got to be a football player, but you got to love him for whatever he chooses to do, even if it's just to be a bookworm. Then you say, oh, well, I'm not pushing him. I'm not motivating him. Yes, you are. And even if you did, look at a lot of their kids. They did all that stuff to their kids, and what did their kid end up doing? Not what the hell they pushed them into. They pushed them away. Kid don't come around. Well, we're seeing families now. But the kids don't come around. Mama, how you hell you have six children, and now as a older lady in the hood, you walking. You don't got no vehicle. You don't got no money. You begging us out here. How? What did six children? You paid all that for them, and now as older, we don't care about our elders no more. We don't go back. We don't fix mom and daddy up. We don't all put a few dollars in. We give that money away to the world on some joints or some shoes, but we don't bring that back to our parents who did all of that for us. So what we're doing is we're destroying ourselves with this method of being alone, with this method of being too strong, methods that were given to us during slavery and still affect us today in different ways. And I mean, I can go and I can dissect. We can, oh man. And y'all have to forgive me for that, because I want to give you so much, because it is so much. We can find all the way down to the trickery of cousins and their relationships and roles in our families, you know, and uncles and aunties. All of those things were taught to us in a way to make us feel like we were different, when in truth, my brother's child and my child have a DNA so close that damn near would make them brother or sister or a relationship like that. But by them calling them a cousin, the name that they instituted in that, that made us psychologically believe, all right, they're not that close to us like that. And so when you don't believe a person is that close, you'll call your brother and sister every day, but you don't call your cousins. You don't call your daddy or mama's brother and sister's son. Your same age, you would rather kick it with straight strangers in the world than build up the real rooted family members of yours, because we have been taught that again. I want you to know all of this. I bring you in love because we know these things, but we don't address them as we should. These things need to be brought up every day in the home, even when you do it. Don't think you just gonna 360 turn around and just stop today. It's going to still be moments. And you're going to see others doing it. And it's not for us to judge them and talk down on them for doing it. Because as we said, everybody been given this cancer. And the antidote, the vaccine for it, everybody don't respond the same way. That's a metaphor meaning we're not all going to heal and understand what was done to us the same way. We got some elders that's just going to say, I don't want to hear all that. Don't whoop kids. And that, you don't do that. I don't want to hear it. I tell you, sit out here, sit there. That. But for all of us that do hear and they do understand and do see it, we will stop allowing that to be our narrative. And pretty soon, the majority of us will indoctrinate the minority, or they'll be what the hell they should be, still in the valley, because we can't wait no more. We are at a day and age right now, a time, a technology. Man on this planet has reached the capability of communication to each other at such a strong level, and we must take that opportunity to reach to every corner of the planet and give each other the truth. When we done did that, we have done as the many folks would tell us that you're supposed to put your spirit all over the world, spill your spirit out into the world. That is by giving truth to each other, because that person's going to carry it to that person, and that person carry that person. So, you know, again,
that's
so
right.
Now they have the system where they don't want us to whoop our kids in school no more. Why did they take the corporal punishment away? I'm gonna stop it. But why did they take
Wait a minute. Before you go into that, I want to let you know that we do have the Minister of Culture on. So when you talk about that part, then we're going to bring him into tonight's discussion. But Brother Greg is on the line. Go as you were, brother. Black Power.
Black Power. But, I want my brothers y'all to come on in and put y'all in. But I just want you to see, you know, so now they've taken it away. Now they've taken the control that corporal punishment was doing, that physical pain was doing for us, and when we were making each other act right and we were producing greater things because we had a fear of a punishment. So now they've taken it away because we started accomplishing too much with the same tactic that they were going to use against us. It started working for us. So now they've taken it away, and so now a lot of our children are going away. They're going crazy. A lot of us are going crazy on it. Because now you can't whoop the kid no more in school, so you don't know what to do when you've only been taught that way. So, you know, I want us to bring up new tactics, new ways to handle ourselves, ways to honor each other in the household. We have to go get our kids when we done put them out, bring them back in. You have to deal with everything this world has taught them to do, because that is you. And in ending, I want my brothers and sisters to know what I shared last night. I shared it not to get you to give me sympathy, but for you to understand that I am one of many that have gone through pains that deep and still come out in all shape, forms, and fashion to help our people. If I can love you through my pain, you must all love each other the same. If my brothers and sisters can love you through their pain, we must all do the same. One love, Black Power. Greetings, Brother Greg.
Black Power, don't you go nowhere. You know, Brother Emmanuel, to everybody that's listening, we want you to press 1 to get into tonight's discussion. I know that's what Brother Greg gonna always tell y'all, but I'm gonna remind y'all too. We have a few new callers on. The way this thing goes is if you have something that you want to say or contribute, you press 1 and we're gonna bring you in by order of how you chimed on. And also by order, if we never heard, saw your number before, we definitely gonna bring you on. And we want to thank our regular participants that call in on a nightly basis. But this topic, the role of the family in the Black Nation, our brother Emmanuel has laid out some key things on how we have been abusive and violent towards our upbringing towards one another, and I alluded to how these are vestiges of chattel slavery. I am a mother. I know my brothers, both my brothers are fathers. And so, you know, we've all had these different knowledge and experience of different ways people are reared. But I want to bring the brother in, but I also want to talk about the importance of having the male figure in the house, the importance of having the female figure in the house. And when you don't, how that's balanced out, because many of us have been having to raise to address that as well. So I'm passing the mic to Brother Greg at this moment, but I'm going to come back to the different roles of the different, the mother, the father, and the children. But for the moment, let's hear from Brother Greg, and we know he's a father. We hear his daughter every night on the show.
Black power. You can hear me?
Yes, sir. You're coming in good.
All right, Black Power. Another great topic, you know, as always, and as our sister, our national chairwoman said, you know, hit that number one. And I hope there are people who are listening in and who already hit that number one and who are waiting, because, you know, we'd love to hear from you. Just for a moment, I do just like to share that, you know, we would love to hear from you. You never know, you know, what you're going to hear or what a person has to say that can inspire and motivate the next person along. So I know that there's a lot of people at times that just listen into the show, but for those who do that, I just want you to keep in mind that there's something that you might have on your heart, might have on your mind, that is what the next person needs to hear. It could be what inspires and motivates them to push them to change, whatever it is that they're challenged with. You know, we don't know what it may be, but that's the number one reason why I always encourage, you know, all of our listeners to hit that number one. You never know, you know, your words might be what it is that saves a person's life. Someone might be sitting around contemplating, you know, taking their own life or taking another person's life. But whatever it is or whatever the situation is, you know, you may have something to share that would alter, you know, and change their decision. But, again, tonight is a fantastic topic, you know, the role of the Black family or the role of the family within the Black nation. And for me, first and foremost, to speak personally as a parent, I have five children. My oldest daughter is 34. I have a 32-year-old daughter, a 31-year-old son, a 28-year-old daughter, and a 3-year-old daughter. So there's a 25-year gap in between my last two children. And I remember when my 28-year-old was born, I always said that I'll never have any more children, you know, because I didn't want any more children. But looking at things now and having a 3-year-old daughter, number one, is personally is like riding a bike in a lot of, you know, respect. And I say that because of me as a person, my character, what was instilled in me from my mother and my father, being raised in a two-parent household, it just seemed like a lot of things I just walked right back into, you know, despite having a 25-year, you know, gap in between them. But I would say that having children in their 30s and having 8 grandchildren and looking at the world the way and the condition that the world was in before she was born, my 3-year-old was born, I do see a major, major change. And one thing our sister Krista pointed out a few minutes ago before I got on in regards to the father being absent in the household, a mother being in a predicament of being the primary provider, because the dad or the father, the male figure, is not there. I look at and I can see many different situations and reasons why the dad wasn't in or hasn't been within the household. And it's a challenge in many regards of having and seeing households without a dad present in there. It's something that's extremely overwhelming. Something that for me, when my oldest children were born, my oldest three children were born, I was put in a situation where I was the parent. Their mom, my oldest three, has the same mom. At the time, she pretty much didn't want to be very involved. We had children when we were young. My oldest was born when I was 17 years old. So I immediately went into, you know, fatherhood. It wasn't a major, major challenge to make a decision between being a dad and to want to hang around my friends. I had my dad there. And I had seen at the time what it was to have a male figure in the house. And I learned so much. I've learned more from watching and observing my dad than my dad having to tell me a lot of things. So when he had those moments or those times where he had to tell and explain something to me, it really clicked, you know, rather quickly, because I was able to put together the actions of what he did and how he lived. And what he said, it made it a lot easier, you know, for me to comprehend and understand how to go about doing certain things. So at the young age of 17, having children, having my first child, and by the time I was 19 and by the time I was 21, I had three kids. So having to work and not so much focus on running the streets, that wasn't a difficult choice. And having my mom and my sister, who's a year younger than me, being such supportive individuals, it really motivated, not so much motivated me, it really helped me to see the type of women that are needed within our society, even at that young of an age. So if I were to fast forward now to having a three-year-old, I can clearly see the differences in the generation, the differences in the generation gap, where there's been so many decades where there's been single moms running a household that a two-parent household in many cases, and I'm not using that as a blanket saying every case or every situation, but to have a single mom in the household has become so common and so normal that when there are conversations about a dad, two-parent household, being in a relationship because you want to be in a relationship and build a family and marriage, et cetera, it's clear to me that that can be a foreign conversation to many people, because it's so common now of having a single parent household. That is a challenge, you know, that I've seen. And, you know, many people close to me now that are experiencing that, and they take it in stride as if it's something, you know, normal. But it's not something normal. As a people, that's not what and how we are. Having a household with the two parents in the household is something that is staple. It should be, you know, staple. Unfortunately, there are situations where there aren't two parents in the household. But even when there are situations like that, I think it should be very amicable where the two parents can work together to still build and raise a child or children, you know, together. But with so much thrown at us in society, it's clear to see just how difficult and challenging, you know, that is. This is a very, very, very good topic. And I wish we had, and I'm hoping that we don't get cut off and we can go another hour or so. But it's a very, very good topic, and I would love to hear.
Oh, you don't know, because the first 30 minutes of the show, we had to start the show over. So we're going to go over into 9:30, because when I was scheduling the show, I neglected to put in the duration, so it defaulted to 15 minutes. But that 15 minutes ran over, and then we wound up having to, but it ran over, so it timed just perfect for us to restart and pick the subject back up. So we definitely got an extra 30 minutes. But Brother Matthew, you were trying to weigh in? You were trying to chime in with, to go back and forth with what the brother's saying?
He was going magnificent. So, I wanted him to expound talk more on this also, because this is a trend that it's not new. Because this is so real. You just said it yourself. Brother Greg just said at a time, and he was trying to be nice, y'all, by just saying that he had to take care of his kids himself. The mama left. Whatever the reason it was, she left. That shows right there that he was a single black father taking care of his kids. Now, the reason I bring that up is because I come up in the 80s and the 90s. I saw a lot of my friends in their families, and although it's been popularized through the media, although they have went after our women to destroy our families, although that is what we all see and say about single black mamas, and that's supposed to be the biggest problem, but in truth, in reality, we're going to have to face it, because I bear witness to this. I saw so many of my friends with their fathers taking care of them by themselves, because at a certain point, a lot of our women stopped taking care of the kids like big mamas did. And this is a reality, because like you did that, brother, I'm sitting right here myself with two little girls because their mother had what the world calls, you know, that case of I don't want to do it. It's a lot of sisters that are out here that are running wild, and they have made children, and these children are either with the fathers or with the fathers' families. But we have to address this problem. It's not just single black mamas. It's single black daddies out there. It is all dropped into single black families is the problem. When you think that you could run it by yourself, the world will make us do that. But we want to let everybody know that is not how it's supposed to be done, in a way that it would be easy to you. Yeah, you can do it. We can do it. I changed camp to do all that for girls, and I have seven seeds. I have six girls. So we know that this is crazy, because people always say that, oh, men can't take care of the kids, and all. That is a lie. And it ain't just started in this generation. It has been going on, but it ain't been addressed, because all the women, a lot of them, do not want to be mothers. Just because a woman is a mother through the genetic structure of her body doesn't mean that she prepared or planned in her mind to want to take care of children, to have children, or to be in a family setting with children. Every woman, just because she make a baby, that's not her plan. And we got to be real with it. Some of them use kids for financial gains. Some of them use kids for emotional gains. Some of them use kids for the system. Some of them use kids to kill them. But address that, bro. Address the need for us to start uplifting the fathers, because that is a big thing that has been going on and still goes on. Our women leave. Men stay, it's men that leave and it's women stay. That leaving is the total problem. But we got to let people know that in the black community, it ain't just single black mamas, man. It's a hell of a lot of daddies, good daddies, that are taking care of boys, girls, kids, all that, diapers, Pampers. All, let's uplift them, but let's address the problem also. And you know what I'm saying? Can you expound on that, brother?
Absolutely, you're absolutely right, and it's downplayed to the point where it's almost neglected and non-existent when it comes to talking about fathers who are single parents raising, you know, children. It gets to the extent where that is put out in society as if it's something that's rare, but in reality, it's not. It's not rare to have dads, you know, raising their children. It's not something that is it's uncommon. It happens, and it is continually to happen, you know, every single day. And because, in my opinion, because society gears and direct things to portraying the women as being predominantly raising children, maybe that's true if someone were to take some accurate statistics. But even if it is true, that doesn't give any right or any justifiable reason to minimize the dads who are out there doing and putting in that same effort and that same work. And another thing that you mentioned, brother, was there are plenty of
Brother Greg? Brother Manuel, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm still here.
I don't know what happened with Brother Greg.
Probably his phone.
Yeah,
we don't wait on.
Yeah, let me chime in on this discussion also, because I want to balance it out as usual. You know,
I'm all for it.
I've seen. It's not uncommon. Everybody, we just need to keep it real. There are plenty of brothers who are raising single families as a whole. There are plenty. It's not a rarity, but it's not a majority. The majority of families that are single-parent households are being ran by women. I come from the product of a mother who raised four children, single parent. I know other people have. It would be what we see a lot, and we have to be careful that when we don't use generalizations, because when we see it's become so commonplace that when we do see brothers raising their children, it's like, oh wow, that's so amazing. It is amazing, just as amazing as it is for the mother to do it. Let's keep it real. Let's keep it real. The way society we are suffering from the vestiges of so-called chattel slavery. You know what I'm saying? Where production of a child was for the benefit of the workplace. You know, and this is really, to be honest, let's keep it extra real. This really came about in our generation. You know what I'm saying? This come about in our generation where they was talking about free love. People just having sex without talking about the responsibility or even talking about family. You know what I'm saying? Where people talking about, I'm just going to get my job, I'm going to get my money, you know what I'm saying? And not talk about having a family. We have been pit against each other. We came up in the era where people say, I'm a pimp. Fuck that bitch, fuck that hoe. And people just go, you know, on this thing where they just, you know, having sex, having children here, having children there. There are a lot of that that's going on. But for those, it's real. We gotta tell the truth. You know what I'm saying? It's the truth hour. we have been participating in a lot of ways and surviving off of a lot of bad behavior and a lot of things that have been forced upon us. This system where they say, okay, if your family is of a low income, and you have they may or may not be married, but a boyfriend and girlfriend, say the father and the mother of the child, and they'll say, well, sisters, okay, you know, you don't have money, y'all don't have that much money, but we'll give you a place to stay. But when we come do an inspection, if we see men clothes and male shoes, we're putting y'all all out on the street. So then you create a scenario where people are having to sneak their mail into the house because they're on some type of government assistance.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The shit is crazy. I can remember when child support wasn't a big thing. And I can remember a fact when people wasn't paying their child support. People go make babies here, babies here, babies there. Like, how many kids you got? Well, I got 17 kids, 10 kids. Not married to none of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also have those, it pisses me off when people act like it's a rarity that you got a husband and a wife raising a kid. Why is that so rare? And why they act like that's such a phenomenon in the black community? That happens too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. These stigmas that are put on us, these stigmas that they put on our black men, but you ignore the brothers that are raising their kids. Children. You gotta watch this language.
Yeah, you're absolutely. They're not kids, they're children. You ignore
the sisters that are doing it all on their own. When they do the Mother's Day and Father's Day, you got fools talking about, I'm a father and I'm a mother and a father. I need Father's Day. Father's Day is for the father. You got fools talking about, I'm raising my daughters and my kids. I'm a Mother's Day. Come on, now you can went absolutely too far. I do claim the Mother's Day. This, you know, then the role reversal. Now, while we've been doing all of this, being subjected to the male against the female, the sisters raising children by themselves, the men raising the children by themselves, what is this all coming from? Why aren't we uplifting family? In Louisiana, in New Orleans, it was quite common, and I didn't see that in Houston. It was quite common that if you got someone pregnant, you're getting married. It was quite common for people just getting out of high school to get married. It was not common when I came to Houston. Marriage is still a strong culture in Louisiana. Why, I used to wonder why, like, some of my cousins, they all got married after high school. That was a thing to be. And when I came here, it was like, I'm going to get this job, I'm going to go to college, and then I'm going to get a family. Like you can't do it all at the same time. You can't have a husband and a wife and kids and go to school. People do it all the time. These false stigmas that go out. And lastly, I want to say, a lot of times we see it all. You know what is perpetuated a lot? They do that to us with black movie stars or black entertainers. Oh, sister, you're pregnant. Your life is ruined. You can't entertain. What? Trying to coach these sisters into going to get an abortion. Oh, he left me. So if you see it perpetuated on TV or by the stars, then the average person, they doing the same thing too. Why are you pushing abortions in our community like it's normal? Oh, you don't have no husband. Your life is ruined. No. Plenty women raise children on their own. Oh, that girl was no good. You just need to get that baby away. What? I know plenty brothers. They raise their children. I know brothers fighting right now for the right to even see their children.
Mm-hmm.
And these sisters use the child against them. Or the brother get cussed, they're using the child against us. Our role as family. you know, this man, black man hating a black woman hating a black man, this shit has been perpetuated. When all it really, really comes down to, we've been taught to hate each other, period.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not the man or the woman. Black people have been taught to hate black people. And we got to break that shit.
You're absolutely,
we gotta break
you're absolutely,
it.
You're absolutely right, sister. And that's one reason why I'm very careful with my wording and trying to make my points. One in particular, which is, I'm fully aware that if we were to have an accurate statistic, that we would have a majority of single parent households would be led by women. I'm hands down. I wouldn't contest that whatsoever. The number or whatever the percentage may be of black men being single parents may be greater than what I think or whatever statistics might be. But my main point would be exactly what you're talking about, is it shouldn't be any pitting one against the other or making, you know, single fathers raising households as something that, you know, the rarest of the rarest. That's his job, his responsibility, no matter how you look at it. And I'm telling you from, I'm sharing from my personal experience and my personal, you know, opinion. If that's the case, then that's the case. There's no, you know, there's nothing to say to that. Hey, listen, any male can make a child. It takes a man, you know, to raise a child. And with that, you know, there's no looking for no accolades, no pats on the back or anything like that. That's just stepping up. That's just being responsible, period. So,
you know what else I've seen, brothers?
I've
seen a lot of brothers that was raised in a single mother household, and when they had a child, they said they would never let that happen. And they raised their child. I've seen that happen
absolutely.
A lot. I mean, so we have to give each other credit, because our credit ain't gonna come from nobody else. We have
that's
to be
right.
out, like what the brother say, we have to be our own restoration. You know what I'm saying? Because society, anything they can, they gonna try to down our black man. We can't
mm-hmm.
allow it. Any chance they can, they gonna try to down our brothers. We can't allow it. But in not allowing them to down our black brothers, we're not going to marginalize or discredit the sisters either. See, that's
absolutely.
What Willie Lynch said. Willie Lynch role was to keep us divided. You know what I'm saying? And on our watch, we gonna squash all of that. We're going to keep it 100. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, this is a powerful discussion, very powerful. We had a... I was looking at the switchboard, not sure what's going on. We had a few callers drop off. We have a few callers that are still in the queue. So we want to remind those of you who are still in the queue, if you want to get into the discussion, to press 1. Let's see. We still have the normal time when we will be cutting off will be 9:30 Central, 10:30 Eastern. I'm sorry, 9 o'clock Central. 10 o'clock Eastern, but we want to remind everyone that we have an extra 30 minutes tonight. So you have plenty of time to press 1 and get into tonight's discussion. But we have to, you know, let's talk about, I'm going to ask you, brothers, both of you who raise children, and being that, you know, you are, do you guys receive, well, Brother Grant, I know you're with your wife now with the child, but your other children, but, do you guys find that when it comes to getting the support you need as a father, a single father raising the children, do you find that you get the support or respect you deserve? Or is it, you know, like, you know, what, or is it, you know, I'm just leaving it like that. Do you feel like y'all getting the support do y'all receive the support and respect y'all deserve being single fathers raising the children? It's my question to both of you.
When you mention support, or would you?
I mean,
be
from
more
society as a whole, your family, the community, like
oh,
you know.
Okay. Well. Okay.
In
well,
general, you know.
Okay. Well, again, when my first. My oldest, Katera, was born. I was 17. Again, like I said, been 19 and 21. I had 100% support from my mother. I'll start with my mother and my sister. They were actually there at, you know, my mom's house. My dad, I like to call it my dad's house, even though it was both of their houses, my mom and my dad. But when my dad purchased the house back in the early 80s, you know, with my aunt and my mom, you know, that was our family home. And as a side note, we still got that house in our family, you know, ever since then. So my mom and my sister were home when their mom brought them and dropped them off and said, you know what, she can't do this. And she dropped them with, a bag of clothes. And, hey, I mean, my mom and my sister, you know, was like, well, okay, what it's going to be. And at that time, I worked in the morning from 2 a.m. to about 11 a.m. And my mom always told me, she said, well, make sure before you go to work, make sure they're fed, bathed, and in bed. And that's exactly, you know, what they were. I got home around 11:30 or so, didn't work too far from the house, and, you know, got a couple of hours of sleep or whatever, and I was back up, you know, with them. My oldest daughter at the time, I think Katera was about two and a half. And, you know, that was just a normal daddy duty for me. So I got the support from them, and by the time, you know, Katera was going into pre-K, around 4 years old, I had the support of, you know, the teachers. My mom's friends, they came from that era where when we hear those African proverbs in regards to it takes a village to raise a child, that's what I live. That's what I experienced. So the support system was extremely tight and extremely there where, you know, me being a teenager or the teenager I grew up with, you did something wrong, you got your ass whipped all the way down the street before you got to your parents' house and they whipped your ass. That's the type of environment that I was in. So I definitely had that, support, you know, system there. By the time Katera, my oldest daughter, I'll use her as a point of reference. By the time she was going on 5 years old is when I met my first wife. And she had a daughter. So we came together with four kids. And then we had my youngest daughter. So we raised the five of them, you know, together. And we had an incredible, you know, support system. So from that point when we were married up until the oldest ones were going into their first year in college and their first year in the military, you know, it was that two-parent, you know, household. But even, again, before then, being a single dad, I had that support system. And I wasn't looking for, you know, anyone to have the sympathy or anything of that nature. And I think that came more so from my dad. You know, my dad was definitely the type of man who instilled in us, you need to do what you need to do to take care of what you need to take care of, you know, regardless of who contributes, who helps out, but you need to become self-sufficient the best way you can and in as many ways as you can. So I've always, I always praise my father, you know, for that. And I tell many people, you know, stories about my dad. And as I mentioned earlier, I learned so much from my dad just watching and observing in comparison to him having to tell me what to do. So, again, I had that support system there, you know, 100%. So I don't know.
What about Brother Emmanuel? Brother Emmanuel?
For me, it was, you know, it's.
I can't hardly hear you sound right here.
Can y'all hear me now?
I know, very low.
Much better.
Well, for me, I'm dealing with mine actually, well, as we speak right now. But for me, you know, it was more of a, you know, I would see people, and a lot of people give you sympathy. Because they feel like, oh, man, you know, a man shouldn't have to do that, you know, by itself. And in cases, that's true. But, you know, as Brother Greg said, you know, that's our responsibility. And if their mother had a died in the war, or if their mother had a died in a car wreck, you know, I would still have to do it by myself. And vice versa, you know, she would have to do it by herself. If I died that way, you know, if we didn't separate by our own, you know, things, you know, we would still, each individual, have to raise the responsibilities of what we took part in that maiden. So, you know, yeah, nobody gets awards, you know, but what the biggest thing I feel is that, you know, we shouldn't continue to allow people to put our situation as the narrative of our problem. When they say in the black community, the dominant problem is single motherhood, you know, that psychologically tricks the male into believing he's not valuable when it's him as a single father. And that psychologically tricks the female into believing that she's up higher. And that's what's been put out there a lot by others, but it's also been put out there a lot by us. We say it a lot. My issue is single parenting, period, regardless to the way it happened. If you died in an honorable way, if you left, you know, if one person has to raise what two people were meant to raise, that's a problem, period, for the person that's being raised. And we have raised a lot of ourselves, a lot of generation is coming up, you know, under that situation for whatever reason it is. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we're not going to stop the reasons. Like people are not just going to, every time they mate, they're going to get along, you know, for the duration of their whole lives. You know, something could separate them. What I'm saying is, you know, for the kids, you know, that balance be interrupted. And so we have to address when that balance is interrupted in our children's lives, that balance is going to be interrupted in their regular lives. And so we have to show compassion to them. We don't need to be strict on them like the world wants us to be strict on them, beat them into, you know, submission. We go through a lot is all I'm, you know, saying. And we don't need to, us as us, we don't need to be popularizing that narrative too and saying that, you know, because in our community, we know that it's not just single black mothers the problem in ours. It's not just single black fathers the problem in ours. Our problem is being singular, period, because we understand that it takes two to make a child, so it takes two to raise her. I can't do certain things that my woman, the female example, can do for my female daughters who their DNA is dominated by female. I can wipe their butts. I can teach them about the personal things of their anatomy and things that they're supposed to do. But it's that emotional connection that the feminine energy gives forth. I won't be able to give that to them and connect, so they won't get it if they're not getting it from their mother. And the same with the father. It's that connection between a father and his daughter. That's one kind of connection, a connection between the father and his son. That's another kind of connection. We be needing those things, you know, and when we don't get them, you know, we don't be realizing that we are traumatized. and we are not complete. You know what I'm saying? So what we must do is we must popularize in the future for us to, you know, start seeing things like you said they would see in New Orleans. You know, the reason, you know, you said everybody was, as soon as they get out of high school, they were getting married. You know, that became defined as a country thing. You know, if you're from the country, you know, you're going to leave high school, you're going to go get married. Yeah, and the reason why people were leaving high school and getting married, and that was happening in Houston too, you know, but the reason why they were doing that was because a lot of people were living based off of the religious way of life of where you're not supposed to have sex until you're married. A lot of girls didn't want to give that, have sex, not because they didn't want to do it, but because they knew that if you have sex and you have a baby and you're not married, the whole world would shame you. You know what I'm saying? So many people, as soon as they get out of high school, when they're 18 and they're able to be adults and make decisions for themselves, they want to fuck. You know, the only way I can fuck is to get married. And get the, and they got 8, 9 children. That means they were really, you know. So we got to look.
Well,
at
New Orleans
it.
Is not the country. I'm saying New Orleans is a city. I'm saying it was literally a culture. It's a culture thing. Like it was like my cousins. Like I grew up in between both cities my whole life, and in Houston. You know, the girls and even the guys, everybody was like, you know, Yates High School, we're going to go to college, we're going to do this. But in New Orleans, the culture was, okay, you can finish school, now you need to get married. It was a cultural thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It was a culture. And I didn't see that as much when I was down here. It was like, to see somebody get married young, it was, you know, it was unique. You know, it was like, oh, y'all old school. Y'all doing like old school. You know what I'm saying? You know, it was a cultural thing. Now, in the country, I know you're talking about like in the country part of Louisiana, it's understood, but it was more of like a culture. Like, that was like what everybody talked about, you know. I'm going to get, you know, they was talking about getting married. Some of my cousins, like, and I was like, get married. You know what I'm saying? You know, but down here, the push was you're gonna go to college, you're gonna get a job, and then you know get married. It wasn't promoted the way it was promoted in New Orleans. Even to you know, so it's more of a culture thing. But also, I wanted to add, now myself, I was a single parent, single family. I raised a young male, you know, and I had. Just like you guys, I had support from my family, you know what I'm saying, and support from society. And it was a stigma, brother, and now you're saying, oh, you know, you got a baby, you're not married, you know. But, again, it was like, you're going to go to school, you're going to go to law school, you're going to do this, you know, we're going to help you with the child, you know. And so the black community has an extended family from internally in our family to extended. You know, we do a lot of positive things to support each other. We do, you know. We do, but it is a lot of negative that we put on each other, you know, which are vestiges of slavery, as Brother Manuel was saying, is the things that have been taught to us through religion. But it's not anything that's not new to us as a people. I want to just go like our grandparents, even those generations, and just talk about our generation, 70 children born in the 70s and 80s, especially when, you know, the crack epidemic came out and, you know, these things that were put on us to further divide us, like these social programs. You want to get housing, you have to get separated. There have been a lot of tools. There's a lot of schemes, I should say, that society has pushed out to further that divide. But we are going to have to, you know, just like tonight, have these heart-to-heart discussions about, you know, all of the different dynamics that we've been going through. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And know that that's when you're dealing with, even, you know, we got three comrades on the line who have separate experiences, but we can relate. You know what I'm saying?
we can relate, right. You know.
I want to share one thing briefly, and if we got callers on the line, I would love to get them in, if possible. But I just want to share this briefly.
We got Brother Yaya. We're going to bring Brother Yaya in. After you, we're going to bring Yaya in.
Okay, I'm going to share this briefly on just how much of an impact my mom, a black woman, and I know many other black women, has, you know, on us, us as their children, and just as society. When my oldest sister is probably almost 20 years older than me, a little less than 20 years older than me, and this is a true story. My mom had decided when my oldest sister was probably around 4 years old to go out and to get a job. My dad and my uncle had their own business, Brick Mason, and my mom went out and she had an interview. She left my oldest sister and another young girl about the same age as my oldest sister with a friend of hers while she went on this interview. And something told my mom to go back home. And my mom went back home, and this woman had left my oldest sister and the other young girl in the house alone while she went out to the bar. My mom made a decision that day, and she told my dad, and she always told this story. She said, "I'm never going to let anyone raise my children, ever. And I'm going to do my best to make sure every child is in a safe environment." I grew up with my brother and my four sisters in the household, and my mom babysat a minimum between 8 and 9 other children every day. I was always around my mom raising children, and I saw just how impactful a black woman is in the community. And I'm going back ever since my oldest sister was about 4 years old up until my mother passing away in 2012. My mom babysat kids that grew up, had their own children, and my mom babysat their children almost to babysitting their grandchildren. So something like that has such an impact on a person growing up. But I'm going to leave it at that, and I want to hear what people have to say. I want to hear, you know, the call to chime in.
All right, we got Brother Yaya. Brother Yaya, your mic is open.
Assalamu alaikum. May peace be with you. I'm grateful for tonight's discussion, and grateful for Honorable Brother Greg and Honorable Brother Emmanuel and you, Honorable Crystal Muhammad, for sharing so much of your lives and weaving together what has been so difficult for me in my surroundings to be able to weave together, just like that hand-woven chair that was hand-woven by women in prison, in which has been used in the photos as symbolizing the throne of leadership. Is the hand-woven navigation maps and the hand-woven beams of the night sky and the domes of the night sky, all within that chair, are navigational global African presence, and weaving together how matrilineal memory, that there are families that were like flying fish that nomadically traveled the planet faster than the wind, and people only imagine navigation through the colonial perspective with a fixed mast and collecting supplies and slowly sailing. We're talking about being able to feel planet Earth as home, being able to navigate from sound, from the debris, simply, and so much more than the stars. So parenthood and matrilineal memory, Pan-African, African memory, the Kamal, for example, in Africa, name our children Kamal. And we forget to, what I see in the United States is that families forget to remind the children of the good, what that means. It means the roots of all mathematical knowledge on Earth, the roots of all scientific practices on Earth, the roots of all navigational practices on Earth. And there are families, like my family, that have a matrilineal structure, which means there's balance in a home where parenthood is shared as well as the work. However, what I have noticed is this complex weaving, this matrilineal memory of how the as a survivor of genocide, as being the first person that was blessed with the opportunity to be a father, and after not having a father, losing my father, I am a Chamorro father from the village of Merizo, from the island of Guajan, also known as Guam, and in the village of Merizo during the occupation of Guam. It was the village of Merizo that actually swam out, and it was my ancestors, may peace be upon them, that swam out when the children were being massacred and the families were swam out and found the United States and flared them in and let them know. The rest of the survivors were in caves and survived, and my father was not able to survive that torture. So what accidentally happened was that I was able to have the guidance from my spiritual father to understand my Pan-African consciousness, that by that interruption, by not receiving the conditioning from all of the Western, small movie theater in Guam, imported all the John Wayne movies. And before that, it was because we shared, we had a matrilineal family structure that is not patriarchal. And when we look at policing, it has a patriarchal structure. When we look at family court, it assesses you through a Eurocentric patriarchal template. So the love, like Honorable Brother Emmanuel shared in the story of May Peace Be Upon His Son being shot. And what all that, simply the love of wanting to continue doing the right thing as a father, exposed so many things. And that's why there's so much hope that we are not, we lose our ability to be calm, cool, and collected. The KKK. And imagine how I would be silenced, a fatherhood like mine that says, no, but wait a minute, the reason that everything became a stop was because I refused to, because of my field of work, because of being a scribe and having everything documented, the fact that I have been involved in every meal, and the fact that I raised the children, teaching them how to weave, teaching them how to, and those are metaphors, teaching them the craft, the same craft of our spiritual father, the same craft that colonialism stopped in Guajan. See, Guahan is a colony, so as people can imagine that. Imagine a colony that's an island. How do you take a school of flying fish and tell them to relocate by force once they're dominated and colonized? Was to be brought into the one island and do the interception of their navigational skills to be passed on into our generation. And that war was also interrupted in the fact that I refused to hurt the children's mother, refused to hurt because I could see that the parenting was shared between the children's grandmother and I, so that the children's mother could be free. I could even use that, everything, but refused because a matrilineal family structure is what we use. So therefore, even finances were controlled. So my job was to go out and go out and bring in the resources. And that is exactly, and at the same time, involve the children in learning the crafts of the memorization to be able to reclaim our mathematical legacies and beyond. So, and to humbly pass on responsibility of now beginning to look at the earth as global citizens. So I realized that the genocide could not happen, that the love for something much bigger than a nuclear family structure is what Alhamdulillah, Mekungok. Listen, I am a movable memory. And this memory, Alhamdulillah, happens to be the same adjacent point and place in time in which Honorable Malcolm X was stopped in trying to reach the United Nations. And Alhamdulillah, the Syrian Dipitus PS location of where this occurred, this genocide and interruption to my fatherhood and to the restoration of genocide, in which has allegedly already been restored with some funding to some other people in Guam due to reparations, and what led after the occupation of Guam by Japan is followed World War II, so nobody can look beyond Pearl Harbor. So this story doesn't even exist. So in Guahan, when the so-called Spanish colonizers at the time were able to import colonial Catholicism, and that's why I was careful, Honorable Brother Emmanuel, and when I publicly shared love and support our brother that was at Harvard and needed to get out to finish his book, Catholic Brother, and I said, our Muslim brothers and sisters are going to have to come and pull you out, we'll get you from the roof. Because it's not about being against religions or being put against each other. What colonial, Spanish colonialism, when the churches came in to separate the children and the boys and the girls, and when the boys started telling what was happening to them, it was our female warriors that threw those priests into the ocean. So this has been removed. And there is a, from the global records, and we can't even teach our children the names of our women warriors, that because we shared fatherhood and because they were out in we were in motion, flying fish, we encountered everything all the time. We think we weren't this helpless people stuck on an island. Flying fish, Agwon, Agwon, A-G-U-O-N. These people in this Spanish colony, the first colony of the United States, in which if Honorable Malcolm X had included in the analysis of the 13 colonies and the relationship to Europe and why a black nation should be given the right to simply go to the 13th committee and apply for nationhood, especially right now that we are experiencing the erasure of our cultures, that Honorable Crystal Muhammad be seen through this perspective in order to bring balance and remove this European template in which even our family courts, civil courts, criminal courts still inherently, publicly, and yet through dominance using psychology, remove and everything and assure that their confusion and lack of checking the facts of the fact that we were forced to adopt Spanish names, what is on the paperwork, was seen through this colonial Spanish presence that entered through the land, but not from the ships, and was given minority protection long ago, and because of where in New Mexico, where the nuclear developments were developed, secrecy systems were embedded even into the infrastructure of the city. So the city has protection systems to maintain what is going on, the civil rights abuses, human rights abuses, and now Aboriginal rights as abuses. Beyond what, if the nation would find out that here, Albuquerque and all the surrounding in New Mexico is 100-150 years behind the rest of the country, and that if any of this ever made the media, that we would be repopulated with every justice industry, so-called, because it is time that the world know that Pan-African consciousness, and to request that Pan-African consciousness through the review of the National Psychology Board and how it relates, this complex weaving, to their discussion of whether we should reform policing or reconstruct policing, then we must remember, why are all the policing forces
or
under
abolish
such psychological
policing,
stress?
That's on the table too. Let's not forget that abolish policing is on the table as well.
And abolish policing. Alhamdulillah, because what we're looking at, the psychological pressures of the police forces are simply because they're taking orders from the courts. And the courts are taking orders from the symbiotic relationships that exist between the judges. And here, there's a plague that, oh, you know, remember when the Department of Justice came and did a complete review of Albuquerque? Well, all of the police officers that became on a review, a lot of them got attorney degrees and now are in family court. How can the militarization of family court, it's what we are experiencing here. And alhamdulillah, praises to the Creator. Inshallah, Creator willing, I will survive. And could refuse, because you see, the only way that this could have continued to work is if I joined in turning against into each other. Because what has been uncovered by the same love that we have towards our children is so much more bigger, and it is everything that the black nation has been looking for. It is the forensic exhibits that if Honorable Malcolm X, may peace be upon him, had at the time and would have made it to the United Nations. And let's not forget that, alhamdulillah, our so-called jazz ambassadors, which were utilized by the nation to travel the world and uplift the spirits of our troops and to go and tell other nations, no, we're not experiencing genocide. And you know what we found out, alhamdulillah, Honorable Louis Armstrong, may peace be upon him, refused to stay silent. He picked up his microphone. He refused to stay silent.
Oh, he refused to stay silent. Right, right.
And he, even though he took the funding from these programs that were designed, right, to finally provide the relief to the communities of musical scholars and elders and give them a global audience for the first time, The agreement was to say that at the time, so-called Russia was creating all this so-called propaganda that was using the real to tell the world what the African experience is within the walls of SeaWorld inside of the United States. So
now let me jump in because we have about nine more minutes. We have about nine more minutes, but I do also, as we are laying out these different things that have taken place, as we talk about this role of the family in the Black nation, we've talked about fathers. We started off, Brother Emmanuel talked about the way society has pretty much institutionalized these systems of chattel slavery into how we punish our children via corporal punishment. We talked about the roles of a family, you know, different family dichotomy, I should say, because family, I want to be clear that family encompasses more than just the single mother, the single father, because those are families in and of itself. A single family household is still a family, be it male or female, that's raising children. A two parent household is still a family. So let's be clear on that. But what is taking place and what we must acknowledge is that the fact that with all of these by design and you know, our family structures were disrupted and interrupted by this system and culture and, you know, different tools of the system, be it religion, be it, you know, this culture of, you know, free love and all of this, and this culture of pimping, and this culture of I'm a woman, I can do it by myself. All of these different things that have assisted with creating a society that has a lot of single parent households. But now that they've been able to get away with that, look at what they're doing now. These fucking devils is defining a family now as Tom and Bob, or husband and husband raising the kids. They're defining Jenny and Becky, woman and woman raising a child, with this lesbian and LGBT community. My dad used to be a woman. My mom used to be a guy. You know what I'm saying? How far would they go? They got away with that. Now, these wicked devils, they've been able to push their homosexual agenda. And now what they doing? Now these people, they have a pedophile for a president. Let's be clear. And there is a move right now that they're saying about age. You know how they said, this was a natural desire. This is my natural way. I wanted a man, and I'm a man. This is my natural desire. Now they're saying it's natural for... They're trying to legalize pedophilia is what I'm getting at. There's an organization called NUMBRA. NUMBRA.
Muhammad, man, interrupt.
Yes.
I simply found an uncle watching child pornography, and I tried to report it. I called CYFD, and I was threatened by the mother and the father. And they told me they knew people in the police. They said that their uncle was an ex-APD officer and now ex-DEA. He was one of the big shots that went down to Colombia and took care of a drug lord. So I said, well, I don't care. At the time, we were about to make $3.5 million simply on an educational three-dimensional sound library with my spiritual father, may peace be upon him. We stopped everything and tried to report it anyhow. And I did experience a militarized law firm destroy my entire life. So if I were an LGBTQI plus family, I would have been protected by family court. But yet they can't protect an indigenous culture, so-called an aboriginal matrilineal culture, which so conveniently happens to be analogous with Western feminism.
which once again, right, was came to our island and was stopped immediately, because when they realized that it was their elders that imported patriarchy, and now all the papers that they wrote and all the masters and PhDs that they got by what? Blaming it all on the victims, so-called survivors that were able to, now we are, what we're trying to do is restore the matrilineal culture of our Chamorro existence throughout the planet, which is Pan-African, so there's no other option than to go to the United Nations and apply for nationhood at the 13th Committee. And now the new Black Panther Party, alhamdulillah, praises to the Creator. And imagine if this is 100 years behind, then imagine what an Ahmed Diaz Muslim father that is also a Chamorro father trying to preserve a matrilineal lineage, which means I will not hurt the mother. And that means that all I have to do is expose how 5 years of therapy under a white supremacist template, that if they did that cultural sensitivity training, that those 8-week courses that they take in order did not detect me. So we have to go through something beyond cultural sensitivity and actually allow our cultures, allow who we are as Pan-Africans, as Africans, as Aboriginals, to go beyond the Western movie, to go beyond the Western novel, because we don't exist there. What Aboriginal is, what Indian is, what African is, you all people don't know what it looks like in colonial cultures that have been kept secret. So alhamdulillah, this is the most difficult thing to weave together, is to say that is exactly that the only perspective to look at it. And I wanted to say, if Honorable Crystal Muhammad, as you can see and can feel and sense this modern inquisition in which what I am calling my fatherhood, which means that I can right now get my 50-50 custody. I now have a home, and now I'm ready, but I will not have our cultures erased. And what you have done here in Albuquerque is genocide.
That's right.
And it is Detective Kyle Hartsock, who also is the person.
Well, let's say this.
Hold on.
Yeah. Listen, because
allegedly,
and we listen. I'm just. I want us to listen, everybody.
Will we go to the church?
So much that we have to discuss on this topic, and we have to get a balance in the discussion, because the thing is saying 90 seconds now. Are y'all hearing that? I'll be wondering, do y'all hear the countdown?
They're covering up child trafficking from here to Colombia.
Hold on, listen. Are y'all hearing the 90-second countdown that I hear, or am I just hearing it because I called that close?
I
can't hear it.
Hello?
No,
y'all hear the
I'm here.
Everybody can hear the countdown when they're saying the countdown?
I can't hear it.
Okay, it's probably because I called him as the host. But we're getting a countdown for when the show is technically supposed to end, even though we're into the extended hour. If we are cut off, this discussion is so dynamic. We want to ask when people call in that we're going to have a mind be cognizant and respectful of the time. But also, if this cuts off, we want to remind everybody, if you, anything that we talked about tonight, you want to support the New Black Panther Party financially, if you want to join, go to our website, www.nbcp.org. That's N as in news, B as in black, C as in Panther.com. NBCP.org. Brother Yaya, we're going to have you wrap up what you're saying in 1 minute. And then we're going to have Brother Emmanuel and Brother Greg both here for their closing statement. We need to be conscious of the time. We want to start putting time things on here. Conscious of the time in case we do get cut off. But you got 1 minute, Brother Yaya.
Alhamdulillah. I'm not even able to teach music. I have to say I have to be a volunteer because I can feel the presence of the investigator that knows that I have everything documented. The million phone calls are trying to say, has an investigation has been started? Have you looked at why did my family try to do an intervention and my mother was held at gunpoint and I was arrested instead because I was praying in Arabic in the cop car? And why?
We're gonna need to do a segment to talk about the colonial attack and the genocide that took place and are taking place to the indigenous people of Guam, and also some like a separate discussion. Let me finish my statement, and I was gonna also say. Let me finish my statement. We need to have a separate discussion or topic or broadcast to address what's going on in New Mexico. You know, we have to show respect, brothers and sisters. You know, I'm cool. I'm very understanding. But let's show respect, brothers and sisters. So we're going to finish. That was your 1 minute. Thank you for calling in. And keep calling in. But we're going to need to really have a segment so you can have time to really lay this out, you know, and because there's so much that you're bringing, you know, and same way, grateful. You know, I want to thank you so much, Brother Yaya, Black Power.
I'm grateful.
Brother
Emmanuel, my apologies, Black Power.
No problem, Brother Yaya. I know you got a lot to let out, you know what I'm saying? You've experienced so much. I get it. Trust me. And I want to give it the proper platform where you don't have to be rushed, or we're gonna get cut off. Okay, now let's the same way. I'm passing to you, Brother Emmanuel. Alhamdulillah, Black Power. Brother Emmanuel, you got 3 minutes.
Black Power, and thank you to everybody that came out tonight to your radios and to your phones and listened. Thank you for everybody that came on and shared our stories, Brother Greg. Our Honorable Brother Greg, our Honorable General Christian, our Honorable Brother Yaya, and all those that wanted to share who are not able to, you know, in time you will be able to. But we thank you for tuning in, and we need everybody to go over these topics, you know, in our lives, and let's try to indoctrinate them into the new world order that we are a part of right now. Let's get away from all those things that the slave world taught us, and that we are still exemplifying, fighting on each other, beating our children, using violence to solve our problems, separating the households, putting one above the other when they all go together. Those are the topics that we brought up, and we want everybody to really bring back to our attention and see how we have been manipulated to do it the wrong way. And let's turn it around and do it the right way in love. Let's honor our children. Our children will in love honor us back. Let's just continue to teach it. Let's not expect, you know, unrealistic outcomes of things happening overnight. That's not going to happen. But we're going to continue to build. We're going to talk about this a lot. I give credit to all my friends, sisters, and also on the east side, because me being revolutionary.
He's going real low.
Me being revolutionary and doing the things I do for the community, that's a lot of work, you know, and it takes a lot to be the woman or the spouse of someone like that. So, you know, I take my blame in that, too, to help the world. You know, that sometimes we hurt our own families. And so we're going to have a topic about that. We need it for us to continue to do this, because for us to give, we need our family to be aligned. Those are things we need to restructure.
My brother's having audio problems. It keeps going in and out, brother. You went all the way out.
Can you hear me now?
Much better.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yes,
those
much
are the
better.
Things that, I'm sorry, Quinn. Those are the things that we need to restructure in our lives, the relationships, how we handle each other, how we been handling each other back in the day, and how we have to handle each other today. You know, it's different, but we need to popularize us doing it the right way and raising the family together. You know, a lot of times people think, you know, because they have mutual understanding, daddy come over a little while, mama come over a little while, you know, that that's that's all right. But in truth, the route is not to be that way. If you were to start it, you were supposed to finish it together. And so we have to start popularizing that and stop joining into these narratives that the world is constructing about us. Because when we use them against each other, we're just building that up. You know, our problem in our community is simply this being separated, and we have to be as one. So I love you all, and I give the mic to my comrade, Black Power One Love.
Black Power One Love. All right. Same way, Brother Greg, you got 3 minutes.
Black Power, I'm not even going to take 3 minutes. NBPP.org. Call in tomorrow night. Hit that number one button. I'm going to give my 2.5 minutes. Anybody on the line, hit that number one.
I'm going to take that 2 minutes. I got timed out. I had it timed out because I actually have my family blowing me up left and right. They were expecting me about 9 o'clock, and I've been pushing it. You know, we had the little technical difficulty earlier. I said I was going to push it to 9:40. Of course, they would, the way things been going, it probably let us go to 10 o'clock, but I'm going to have to make a call and go ahead and honor my family if they are expecting me right now. But this topic is very key, very important. I love the passion that we're hearing from all of our brothers. We want to hear more and more. We got a lot of people listening. We love to hear from those in the community. Oh, snap. We got a number I never seen before. Press 1. Let me yield. 346 area code. Your mic is open. We always want to hear from the people. 346, your mic is open. 346 area code. What's your name? What city are you calling from? What's your question and or comment?
Sound like H-Time. Come on, y'all.
346, we can't hear you. All right. Maybe they accidentally press 1. Maybe they on mute. 346, your mic is open. Going once. Going twice. All right, Black Power, I'm going to go back on mute. Very powerful topic tonight. For all of you who are listening, continue to listen to our broadcast. As you can see, this program is not scripted in no shape, form, or fashion. Our brothers and sisters come from the heart. We allow for our people to participate because this is the people's radio. You know, we had a little technical difficulty. We ain't gonna lie. Earlier, I made a little fumble, but we picked it back up, and I just love it. You know what I'm saying? You know, everybody had called in earlier when we told them what was going on. Within minutes, they called back in, and we appreciate all of you that did that as well. And, you know, anything that's going on wrong, don't blame it on our heart, blame it on our head, because we've got a lot happening. But all these things that we talk about, from the Black Nation to the family to leadership, we are doing our best to get the proper propaganda, to keep it real, and to help sharpen one another. It's the uniqueness of all of us that makes us special. It makes us a family, as we are another kind of family, as we are told in our Black Nation, an extended family. And this extended family of the Black Nation, we will and are, as we speak, we're coming out of such a horrific experience, and yet we're still coming through it. Ain't nobody been through what us people, children of Africa, the indigenous of this planet, have went through. And yet we're figuring it out more and more every day. And our representation is being recognized. This is why they are trying so hard to get us off track, have us distracted. You know, and I was, you know, as I was talking about this weirdo, this pedophile, Biden, you know, they're doing so many human rights atrocities with what is taking place with Haiti. Blatant racism in our face. The man got in office by lying and said he was going to do, oh, criminal justice reform is going to be top priority. Kick that to the side. What are we going to do, people? We cannot continue to be the victim. In the words of Marcus Garvey, up you mighty black nation. You can accomplish as you will. And for those of you who do want to ride it out, because I have to really step away, but what I can do, I'll play this clip from Dr. Amos Wilson, and I'll leave this computer up, and I'm even leave y'all mics open and just talk. But there's a 23-minute clip from, I was trying to time it to play this clip in case it goes over another hour. We about to see Dr. Amos Wilson talking about propaganda and nation building. I'll play it, and we're going to ride it out. And if it's still on, the computer's going to be open. Y'all can just jump right in. Talk about a freestyle. We love y'all. Black power.
We must publish more as people. It's very, very important that we do that. We don't have enough information out here. That's very important. And we need solid information out here. We as a people must read also beyond our African-centered books. Some people are getting caught up in reading black-only books or books written only by black authors. I warn you, that can limit your perception. We're writing as much as we can. Other people are writing as much as they can, but frankly speaking, the number of African-centered books written by African authors is still very narrow in terms of the kind of knowledge and information we need to have as a people. And consequently, then, we must integrate a lot of other knowledge from a lot of other sources into an African-centered program. I am concerned with Africanizing information. You can get information from anywhere and any place and anybody. It's not the source of the information that is of major importance. It is the question that you have in mind and the intentionality that you have in mind when you contact that information that is of importance. When you come with certain African-centered questions and certain African-centered intentions, you can subvert the intentions of other people. And even though they may have written lies, they may have written a book to falsify your image, with an African-centered question in your mind and an African-centered intentionality in your mind, you can still gain useful information from that. And you can turn then their intentions into something that works for you. So you just can't say, well, because it's written by a white man, I'm not going to read it. Mm-mm. Or because, well, it's lying and they're intended to do it. No, the fact that you know it's a lie is information. Now, why is it a lie? What is the end point of the lie? What is trying to be accomplished there? What is the technique of the lie? How is this hooked into propaganda? In what way is this group trying to transform my consciousness? What techniques and methods can I get from this to use against my enemies? What are their methods and techniques of propaganda that I can use to advance the propaganda for African people? Because, see, our propaganda is not necessarily lies either, you know.
Right.
And propaganda is not necessarily a negative term.
Yes.
Propaganda comes from the basic word to propagate, to move information, to communicate information, to persuade. And the methods of moving information and communicating information and of persuading people is not a science of Europeans only, not by any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, when you study the oral tradition, you'll find that that tradition is very much grounded in persuasion.
What you're talking about
is very much
black
about
culture in America.
Persuasion. When you even talk about African culture in Africa, you must recognize and you must ask yourself, what is the political economy of the oppressed black culture? In other words, remember, our personalities is a political economic structure. Particularly, and therefore, if we let another people shape our personalities and shape our cultures, those cultures and personalities will operate to maintain their system and their dominance. So while we may praise black culture in America and African culture in Africa and in the diaspora, we must also ask ourselves the question, what is the political economy of these cultures? And what are the various personal and social identities these cultures produce and to whose end? We must recognize that the basic identities of the oppressed are largely socially manufactured by their oppressors' culture and related social practices. And to a good extent, what we call black culture in America today, even though it has deep African roots and African history still buried in it, is still related to and incarnations of Europe-centric culture. And we've got to recognize this and deal with it. We just can't praise it unabashedly. We must look at the degree to which what we see as black culture today is an instrumentality of European culture. And I mean this in the real sense, and an instrumentality of European power, to the point of where African men and women actually fight in combat for European interests. You see, because of the way we have what? Define ourselves as men and women, and even as the way we have sought to try to define black culture in America, you see. And now we have our own people on the soil of Africa. And now we have a man, Colin Powell, plotting out and designing the program for Europeans to maintain dominance over African people. Yes, because we've defined our Africanness in a peculiar way. Black male identity is hooked into this thing as well, which is one reason why we have a lot of problems today. The reclamation of our male youth and our female youth requires an appropriate, thorough, pragmatic, critical analysis, cultural analysis of the deculturation and reculturation of African Americans and their social products as represented by black male identities and female identities. It's not enough for us to show how we were decultured during the diaspora and slavery and so forth. It's very important for us to understand how we were recultured and reorganized. We are not uncultured simply because we don't have African culture. You see, we have been what? Recultured and rearranged and restructured. You see, and we must understand in depth how that restructuring took place and how it expresses itself in us and in the way we relate to each other. You see, because it is this reculturation, ultimately, that we must do what? We must reconstruct. We must tear down. We must remove outside of ourselves. So it's not enough to say what we have been missing as a people, or how African culture, what, taken away from our people, but we must come to understand how we have been newly created by another people, and how does that new creation, under their power, represents itself in our personalities and in our social lives, in the way we think, in the way we behave, in the way we perceive the world, in the way we relate to each other and the whole bit. Because it's with that understanding that you design an educational curriculum for African children. You see, you're not just going to teach them history and culture. You're not just going to raise their self-esteem. That's just the beginning. You got to say, because you can feel good and still be Eurocentric, you know. And you can have high self-esteem and still be Eurocentric as well, you know. Yeah, so there's a whole other process going on. This is why the multicultural curriculum is not sufficient. It is not just a matter of teaching us to respect other people's culture and to look at and accept cultural differences. African people are in a process of reculturation and a process of reconstruction as a people, you see. It's not a situation where the Chinese say, well, you didn't teach my culture in the schools, even though my culture has maintained continuity for the last 10,000 years, you see. And even though I still speak Chinese, I still eat Chinese food, I still buy from Chinese restaurants, I still do almost everything, what, Chinese. Now, I just want you to respect my culture. But that's not where the African people are. You have a cultural discontinuity. You have cultural what? Trauma. Yes, you have a whole reconstruction to undergo. And therefore, a little Pollyanna multicultural education cannot meet the needs of African people. Even African people on the continent are in a process of what? Reconstruction and redesign. You understand? So no light course in dancing with other people and that kind of stuff is going to do what we need. Not at all. The reclamation of our male youth requires an appropriate, thorough, pragmatic cultural analysis of the deculturation and reculturation of African Americans and their social products as represented by black male and female identities. How these identities, whether considered pro-social or anti-social, I've told you on the other occasion that a great enemy to the black community is the good black person. Yes, is the law-abiding black person. Yes. Oh, yes. In fact, we're in this mess because of law-abiding good black people. Yes. What did I tell you? These youngsters that you want to damn in so many ways did not create the world that they live in. They were born and they are reared in the world that we created. That adults, what? Created. They are not making the ghettos. They are not making the joblessness and unemployment. They are not making the poor schools and poor and miseducation. They are not doing and creating these things. It is who? Us. Us. Black adults. African adults. And to a great extent, it is us law-abiding and good ones. It is us ones who don't see color. Yeah. It is us who want to be loved by Koreans, want to be loved by Arabs, want to have racial harmony, want peace between the sisters and the brothers all over this land. You have your mind. And yet you can't have peace in your own house. You can't have peace in your own neighborhood. You can't have peace in your own street. And it's just so Negroish. Really. He's going to solve the problem of all the people before he can solve his own. Yeah. He's going to have the great mosaic, and he can't even get his own piece together. But this is the role the world has set for us so everybody can sucker us, you see. Yeah, that's what all it's about. And what people in the world are going to have any confidence in your capacity to work for all men when you haven't demonstrated your capacity to do what? Work for yourself. I'm qualified to solve all men's problems. Solve your own problem, man. You haven't solved your problem yet. In fact, we don't need you to solve our problem. We're doing quite well. We're rich, we're powerful, we're in control, we got great armies, and you want to solve our problem? Yeah, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing, but you know, again, what did I tell you? In order for us to be in the condition we're in, we have to be what? Backwards. We have to be completely returned around. And we have to go in the very opposite of the way we should go as people. We have to forget our first impulse and change this thing around a bit, you see. We must understand here, and it is the pro-social ones. They feel good. I can spend my money where I want to. But why do you only want to spend it with other people then? What is it? I live wherever I want to. Then why do you want to live with only other people then? What is it? And watch the Negro, as I've said before. Yeah. I'm free to buy where I want to, but he never feels free enough to buy from himself. I'm free to live where I want to, and he thinks that means he has to live in a white neighborhood, you see. I'm free to do this and free to do that, and each expression of his freedom requires that he gives up to someone else. The white man doesn't want to live in your neighborhood, but yet he doesn't feel like that's an infringement on his freedom. He doesn't buy from you. He doesn't feel that that's an infringement on his freedom. doesn't live with you, doesn't feel that's an infringement on his freedom. Doesn't go to school with you, doesn't feel like that's an infringement on his freedom. You see, the Korean the same way. In fact, they feel freest the further they can get away. You see, but only the Negro, in trying to express his freedom, feels compelled to impose himself and his money and his wealth and his talent and everything else on outsiders and other people. Yeah, backwards, turned around. And to do it for himself, he feels bad. He feels guilty. He suffers from a guilty conscience. He feels irreligious. But it has to be that way if we are to be what? Suckered and robbed as a people. Yeah. And this is the name of the game. There shall be no racial harmony for the next 20 or 30 years, ladies and gentlemen. You got to get used to the idea. You got to get used to the idea if you're going to win your freedom that you're going to be disliked by a lot of people and a lot of ethnic groups. Yeah. You got to get used to living with great tension. If you're going to reclaim yourself and reclaim your life, if you're trying to maintain peace and harmony with every other ethnic group, they're going to put conditions on it. You can maintain harmony if you let me sell to all your kids and you never own anything. You can maintain harmony as long as you don't disturb my economic domination. It's just like this anti-Semitism stuff that's got LIB jammed up. Oh, yeah. People, you know, at one point it's not a race, it's a religion. At another point it's a race. You know, what's going on here? The thing that you have here, ladies and gentlemen, is a political strategy.
Yes, sir.
And an economic what? Strategy. An instrument of what? Control. A means by which one can control the behavior of others. You can call it religion, ethnicity, anything you want to. But its ultimate reality is that it is used to do what? Control the behavior and perceptions of other people in the interest of the people who belong to that thing. That's all it is. And the first question you ask, and so the thing goes out, you're anti-Semitic. Now, it doesn't matter what you said, whether you told the truth or not the truth, or this or that, has nothing to do with that. Not at all. It has to do. Now, the next question you're going to ask is, oh, how can I not be anti-Semitic? Don't say this. Don't say that. Don't do this. Don't do that. And then we won't call you what? Anti-Semitic. And so in striving to be what? Not anti-Semitic, you then what? Fall under the control of another people. Regardless as to whether they are right or wrong, or regardless of how unfair they are, as soon as you meet the requirements of not being called anti-Semitic, you're under control. And yet, here's a people that's less than 3% of the American population, less than 0.1% of the world's population, who through the use of that term and through the throwing of that accusation can manipulate whole political and economic and social systems. And then they're the first one to tell you that you shouldn't talk in terms of race. And you should not use what? Your ethnic identity as a base of what? Power. And you should not use your ethnic identity as the base for political and economic strategies, you see, and as a means of what? Controlling other people's behavior and so forth, you see. Ethnicity is much deeper than the demarcation of ethnic characteristics, man. You see, and cultural characteristics, you see, are part of the totality of a people's power. And we have to understand that. And when we are training our youngsters, we have to understand that. We have to get these young men to understand. And when we are training them for manhood and the young women for womanhood and so forth, it requires that we perceive white supremacy as the major social and political and economic spiritual problem to be resolved by African people. And that we ask ourselves the question, what kinds of men and women must we produce in order to overthrow white supremacy? And overthrow white supremacy must be our goal. If you're not about overthrowing white supremacy, you're not about African-centeredness. Mm-mm. And the other thing is, if you're not about nation-building, you're not about African-centeredness either. Anyone here is talking about African-centeredness and so forth is not talking about nation-building I'm not talking about the building of a Pan-African economic and political system, is really, to my mind, not talking about African-centeredness. No, sir. Because the education of our children and what that education means and what it should contain and the educational experiences they should undergo must be defined within a framework of overall purpose and goals for our people. Where are we going? What is our major problem in the world? One of our major problems in the world is white supremacy. This is not the problem of white children, you see. And an appropriate education of African children then requires that they be trained to do what? Solve that problem. And an education that does not include how to overthrow white supremacy among black people and how to destroy white power over black people is not African-centered. Mm-mm. I don't care how much culture you teach, how much history you teach, it's not about that. It's not about that. An education that is not about building a black nation and a nation within a nation and an African system of people cannot be an African-centered education. When you study economics and science and all of these other things, they must be studied within the frame of where you're going as a people and as a whole. You see? And their organization must be structured in terms of overall goals, national and international goals. When the United States has been challenged, white folk in the United States were challenged by the Japanese. They looked at what? Their educational system. And they are trying to transform their educational system and the educational experiences of their youngsters so that they can create in them the motivations and attitudes and relations that will make them possible to defend themselves against the growth of Asian power in the world. They're not just teaching them A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, how to add accounts. All of this has to be integrated under a national goal. You see, we are doing business not only just because we want to go to work and come home and buy beer and look at football, but because doing business in this way and relating to each other this way and doing accounting in this way and so forth, allows us as a nation to protect our interests, to maintain our style of life, to maintain our freedom and independence, even though you as an individual think you are just going to work and coming home. You see? And think you're just drinking beer and looking at the football game. But frankly, if you look at the totality of the way the economic and political system operates, you're a part of a total system, and what you do is integrated in a system that is designed to act in the world. Now, we as African people then must lose our unconsciousness in this system. We must become conscious of ourselves as workers, as professionals, as this and that, and whatever we are, and be aware of how what we do is integrated and related to the whole of African people and to African ends and purposes. So it is not enough just to gain skills or just to gain knowledge. You must ask skills for what, knowledge for what, and in what way does my skill and my knowledge contribute to the advancement of African people as a whole? In what way can these skills be institutionalized and be built into the culture such that our culture expresses itself as power?